Always Holding to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Gavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Joe Mickendo, Steve Rogers, Thomas Navin, Tim Miller, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Mariana Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Rachel Miller, Casey Cochran, Andrew Parker, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Dylan D'Antonio, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Kathleen Holland, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Cosso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirch, and Jessica Kaminsky. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
Hey guys, this is Laura Vandervoort. I played Kara Kent / Supergirl on Smallville, and you are listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Home to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined once again by Mr. Eric Cowan to talk about Smallville Season 11. It's another Superman special. We are talking about the fifth arc of Smallville Season 11, Olympus. That's issues 16, 17, 18, and 19. And also the second season 11 special, number 2, Valkyrie. So what's up, Eric?
Hey, how's it going?
Exciting that Wonder Woman has finally come to Smallville, so we'll be talking about that first. Olympus, which is a very appropriate name for an episode featuring Wonder Woman. If this was a real episode of Smallville, I think that's an appropriate title. Also, they might have called it Wonder, huh?
Yeah, we finally get to meet that wondrous woman Chloe told us about.
That's right. Yeah, tying it all together, which I don't think they actually reference in here. I don't know when she would have met Wonder Woman, but yeah, you know, off the top, these covers are great. The Superman looks like Tom Welling in these covers, especially the first one, issue 16. It's that famous picture of Tom Welling flying from season 4. And they've just kind of put a Superman suit on him, and Wonder Woman's bracelets, you know, the reflections. We see a Tom Welling-looking Superman in the rest of the covers, which is pretty impressive.
The covers, but not the inside.
No, not at all. Like, by far, this is the most not Smallville-looking artwork inside these issues. Brian Q. Miller returns to write. He's still the writer, obviously. But Jorge Jimenez did the artwork for this arc, and man, it looks nothing like any of the characters, does it?
Yeah, it looks basically what you'd expect to see in a Superman comic book, and he's even ridiculously muscular like a Superman comic book. It couldn't look less like Clark unless it had blonde hair or was a different race.
Yeah, I don't know what the issue was here, but yeah, you could have just slapped, you know, Action Comics number 718 or something on here. I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, there is no Smallville to be seen. But, you know, I will say, I think Martha Kent looks like an Ed O'Toole, right?
Yeah.
But
they seem to do that a whole lot. They'll do a good job with a lot of other characters. But him inside the comics, he looks like a generic Superman.
Anyway, that does kind of take you out of the story. Because if you want to see Smallville's Clark Kent meet Wonder Woman, I want to see Smallville's Clark Kent meet Wonder Woman. You know, I don't want to see generic comic book Superman. But, you know, getting that out of the way and aside, what did you think of finally, you know, introducing one of DC's big three into the Smallville universe here? Because, you know, we got Batman, now we're on Wonder Woman. So what did you think of this?
Well, you know, they're just going through the motions, checking off all the big superheroes that they didn't get to bring in yet. So it was probably better than the last issue. Not my favorite or anything, but it was pretty good. So we get this issue, and then the other issue is also girls. You know, it's Lois and Lana. So it's like basically an all girls episode today.
It's girl power. That's right this time. Just a brief overview. You know, it's interesting how they introduce, you know, the concepts of Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor in this, that we have some flashbacks. Steve Trevor, you know, famously Wonder Woman's love interest throughout her mythology, and usually he lands, crash lands in Paradise Island when he's a, you know, a grown man. But in this one, they switch it up. He's a boy, and Diana is also a girl. So they're like, you know, they meet as young children, and then she calls him his secret boy, keeps him a secret from her mom and all the other women on the island. And then eventually, Steve Trevor's discovered, and Hippolyta, Wonder Woman's mom, take Steve Trevor back to society, which, you know, I guess ties into, you know, there's that headline in Asylum, I believe, and it's of Themyscira Queen addresses Congress or something along those lines, and you're like, oh, well, I guess Wonder Woman's mom was around in our world back then, and that was about, that was season 3, this would be season 11, so that's like 8 years ago, and I think that works with the timeline. So I thought that was very, they don't really address it head on, but I think that's interesting that kind of they take that little Easter egg from an episode years ago, and it kind of makes sense why Wonder Woman's mom is in the real world. But we also have the DEO, which becomes famous on the Supergirl TV show. It means something like extra Department of Extra Normal, instead of extraterrestrial this time on the Smallville comic books. But interesting to see that play a big role. And then you get all these other Wonder Woman side characters like, you know, Felix Faust. And then you get, obviously, the God of War down there. Or not the God of War, but Hades. Not Ares, Hades this time. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you get to see a lot of new stuff. And then Superman mentions that, you know, he's no good with magic, which is basically what these guys are. So that's why they pose a threat to him, you know. And, you know, I like the overall story, you know, especially at the end where, you know, Superman, you know, he defeats him with words, not necessarily force, and that's a good skill for Superman to have. He's not all brawn.
It was kind of forced though. I mean, it's not like he's just like, hey man, you know, we should talk this out. No, I'm gonna throw you into outer space, and you are just gonna float through outer space for all of eternity and never see another being and watch stars die out. And he's like, oh, that sounds horrible. I surrender.
You found it a little anticlimactic, Eric, is what you're saying?
No. I like the ending. I thought the ending was really good. I'm just saying it wasn't like he was necessarily just being diplomatic. It was more like we're aiming a nuke at you, surrender or we blow you up. That's basically...
Fair enough. I see your point. Yeah, I guess, you know, I guess I kind of more latched onto it at the end. You know, they're like, how did you defeat him? He's like, I used words. It's like, well, yeah, I guess you're right. He did do the classic... Superman is going to throw something into space, which is what Superman does a lot to solve his problems.
Imagine you get somebody to back down by holding a gun to their face, but you tell them, look, if you don't back down, I'm going to shoot you. They back down. How'd you get them to back down? With words.
The power of words.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a good point. I didn't really consider it from that angle, but you're right. You're right. You know, and, you know, Wonder Woman in this, she comes to... You know, the world of man, not too long ago, but she's here to search for her mother, which I think was a good hook, you know, because her mother had disappeared when she returned Steve Trevor all those years ago, and they meet up. And I don't know, the way they drew her mom, like, I was like, is this supposed to be Linda Carter, or maybe?
I'm going to go ahead and go with Linda Carter would make the most sense, I guess. But yeah, I kind of noticed that too.
There were a few panels where I'm like, oh, okay. Like I could see that this was based off someone, but I would assume it was Linda Carter, being the only live action Wonder Woman at the time. When you were reading this, did you hear the Wonder Woman theme from the DCEU in your head? Like, da 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 da, you know?
I actually didn't, but I was thinking about you know what I want to do? I want to like play. The music from those movies. I thought about doing it, but I never did do it. Sometimes when I read a comic, I'll bust open some like Danny Elfman or Batman versus Superman soundtrack. I do that every once in a while. I didn't do it this time though.
No, I'm the same. Not all the time, but occasionally to kind of to ramp up the experience. And I love the Wonder Woman theme. I think it's amazing. So that's kind of, I was thinking, like, where would this play? Where, if this was really on screen, where would this show up? You know, the Wonder Woman theme. Yeah. There might have been a couple times. And, you know, I think her white outfit she's in before she changes into the classic Wonder Woman kind of costume, I think that's probably a reference to Wonder Woman in the 70s. They did, like, a different take on her where they depowered her, and she was, like, a government agent, and she wore all white. And I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of a deep cut reference to that time period, which I thought was cool, because you don't really see her Wonder Woman outfit until, you know, the third issue, I think. You know, she has the bracelets and all that the whole time, and, you know, I like when she's, like, protecting Steve Trevor, and, you know, she's deflecting all the bullets with her bracelets, and he's like, I thought you were bulletproof, and she's like, well, do you think I enjoy being shot? Which I think is a good point, right?
Yeah. I've always kind of wondered about that, though, because, you know, I don't think Superman feels bullets too much, so he doesn't really care. I wonder how much she does feel them. Like, did you ever read the Injustice comics, which this is – I don't really consider this realistic in most terms, but she beats Superman up, breaks his arm and all kinds of shit in a straight-up fight.
No, you know, I've never actually read the Injustice comics, no.
Yeah, they're pretty good. You should read them. But that – I mean, I don't really necessarily go for that part, but the comics are pretty insane.
Well, you know, speaking of Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor, let's talk about Steve Trevor. Another ex-boyfriend for Lois Lane, huh?
Oh, yeah. She's dated everybody.
I mean, she really has. It's like, you know, on the show, it's, you know, Aquaman, Green Arrow, now it's Steve Trevor in this, and they mention, it's funny because Steve Trevor sees that she's engaged, and they mention Wes Keenan, who was the guy in Prototype, the season six, end of season six, one of the super soldiers, Lex is creating, and that's another ex-boyfriend for her, and Steve Trevor's like, oh, did he finally pin you down? You know, so again, deep cut continuity.
Yes.
You know, it makes sense that they're going to give, you know, Steve Trevor the military background, Lois military background, that their paths will cross, but I just like, oh, another ex-boyfriend for Lois Lane, who is a big character in the DC mythology. So
you got to make her date every super being before they were super, after they were super, or who date super. If anybody's even involved in the super world, Lois is dating them. Bruce Wayne, maybe even.
Yeah, and you know, that never happens in the Smallville universe, obviously. Bruce Wayne showed up a little too late, but, you know, and Superman the Animated Series, and there have been other iterations where the Bruce Wayne and Lois Lane are a couple at some point, but...
I got a feeling when they were teenagers, they dated.
When he was traveling the world, their paths crossed. But...
Exactly.
You know, it was nice to see Martha Kent. A lot of this takes place in Washington, D.C., so we see her and Shelby again, which was nice. They do kind of mention, you know, that there are some, I guess, themes going on about, like, hey, you know, Clark has an identity because, you know, the world has changed since the 80s when Lionel helped invent a, you know, birth certificate and stuff for Clark. And there is, they do talk about that, how, you know, why are they flying around, you know, on airplanes when Clark could just fly them there, but that would cause suspicion. And so I think that was pretty cool, the logistics of Superman being discussed and things. But meanwhile, Wonder Woman has no identity because, you know, she just showed up, right? And working for this DEO, what did you think of the Bones character who, like, his name was Bones before he turned into a skeleton? It's kind of convenient, right?
Yeah, kind of like Edward Nygma, Enigma. But I think his name, they ended up eventually changing it to where it's actually Edward Nashton. But still, that same kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I always think of Scar from The Lion King. It's like, so your name was Scar before you had that very distinctive scar. Yeah. Well, yeah, because you see this guy, and I'm like, what is up with this Bones guy? And then you find out, oh, he went back on his deal with the devil, you know, and then his skin and muscles became invisible. Because I'm like, how is a skeleton smoking a cigar and stuff like that? It's a really... You know, it's a pretty cool visual, and then they explain it where, no, he is still a person, but he's just invisible, has to paint on his skin. So it kind of reminds me of Derek Powers from Batman Beyond, actually, Blight, the radioactive skeleton guy. So it's kind of the same situation there. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'd wondered if this character was in comics or not, because I didn't know that character at all.
Yeah, you know, and you know, they tie it together where him and Felix Faust, you know, they find a porter to Hades, basically, and during World War II. That's a pretty good way to ground a lot of this Greek mythology, because that's what these characters are, and I like it when Wonder Woman is so kind of steeped in that. I think that's her strength when she's steeped in the Greek mythology, because that gives her own kind of mythos. And then also, you know, her worldview is so different. I could tell that Wonder Woman had a different voice in this. You know, like, she came from a different world. She has a different perspective, you know, and that's what makes her interesting and not just another, like, oh, it's a woman Superman. No, she comes from a different place, has a different worldview and expresses that. And I like that. And that distinguishes her from being, like, just another generic, you know, superpowered person who's like a female Superman. So I like that.
Yeah, same here. I was glad that Clark, well, that wasn't really Clark. Superman that looks nothing like Clark was the hero of the story. I'm glad that he actually was the one to beat Hades.
Yeah, that's a good point. Not to let the guest hero come in and save the day. He ultimately was the one to defeat Hades
with his words, which
with his words
monumental threats. So.
And then we had Steve Trevor, and now is the head of the DEO. And him and Wonder Woman are going to work together. So I like their dynamic too. I was like, oh, I was rooting for them, you know, because he obviously, you know, as a little boy, fell in love with this little girl on Paradise Island, and then they had been apart for several years. So I think they had a really good dynamic, and to have two guest characters like that who you really like, because Steve Trevor, he's such an ill-defined character, really. You know, in my opinion, I haven't read a lot of Wonder Woman comic books, but, you know, he's in a couple episodes of Justice League Unlimited. And then, you know, and until the Wonder Woman movie, you know, with Chris Pine in 2017, you know, there really was no, I think, definitive take on the character. But to speak about, to use this as an excuse to talk about other DC stuff, you know, obviously by the time we're recording this, Wonder Woman 1984 hasn't come out yet. But apparently Steve Trevor's going to be in it. Chris Pine is back. And I don't know how I feel about that, because it's like the whole point of Wonder Woman is the tragic, or, you know, the one Roman in the DCEU, as established in, you know, Wonder Woman and Justice League and Batman v Superman. The whole point is like, oh yeah, Steve Trevor died in World War I, and that's why she kind of gave up on the world of man. And yet here she is in the 80s, and he's back, and I'm like, is this a clone? Is this a grandson?
Do you know who the villain of the story is by chance in 1984? Who's the villain?
Well, the Cheetah is in it, and then Maxwell Lord is also in it, so.
Well, maybe it's like some kind of, maybe it's not actually him. Maybe it's the tricker into thinking it is him. But also, the whole 1984 thing, I believe it's going to ignore Batman versus Superman, because the whole thing about Batman versus Superman was she's been completely inactive since like 1910 or whatever. And like Bruce even says something to her about it, about, you know, or no, he says it in Justice League about how she just hid for 100 years.
Yeah, I mean, she says she walked away from the world of man. I don't know how they're going to explain why she was around in the 80s. So yeah, you're right. It very well may ignore stuff. So we'll see. That's a dangerous thing they're doing. Like, I know, everybody loves Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor. Let's bring it back. I'm like, yeah, but you kind of undercut the whole, like, tragic love story. And
maybe they'll make the DCEU like the X-Men universe of movies, and just nothing makes sense at all.
Very well. They very well may do that. But yeah, you know, as we said with Batman, I don't remember if Wonder Woman comes back in these comic books. We were definitely wrong about Batman, because he shows up a lot. After detectives, yeah. So we'll see. If nothing else, I'm sure she shows up in the final arc, because it looks like, based off the covers, because I haven't read that one yet, I was saving that to the end. Every other superhero shows up for the continuity arc/episode. But yeah, this was a really good introduction for Wonder Woman. Really well balanced mythology between the Superman mythology of Smallville and the Wonder Woman mythology as we know it. I think they interpreted it really well. So that is Olympus. Now let's talk about Smallville Season 11 Special Number 2, Valkyrie. Now this features Lois Lane on her side adventure. That's where she was during the Argo arc. You know, we got a little mention of how she was going off to Africa to investigate an angel over there. And that's where the Valkyrie title comes from. You know, it's just an angel from the heavens, that kind of thing. And it's none other than Lana Lang. So this issue, this special, ties up, or at least follows up, Lana's story from Smallville, which is something that, you know, honestly, they really, and I know Kristen Kirk didn't really want to come back and all that, but as big as a part of the series, you know, love her or hate her, right? She's a very divisive character, Lana Lang on Smallville a lot of the time. I think that character deserves some kind of follow-up, right? And I think this was a really good follow-up. What about you, Eric?
So I'm curious, did you love or hate Lana Lang?
You know, I have a love-hate relationship with Lana Lang, I guess. I was really on board with Lana in season one, right? I think as we all were. But I was more of a Chloe guy. You know, so when that started to develop, I was like, oh, okay, well, great. Why are you going to waste your time with Lana? Your best friend over here. She's amazing. So, but you know, when they did get together, like, especially season five, I was real happy for them. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. They finally, you know, this is something Clark has wanted for years now, and it's finally a reality. So that was great. But then when we sunk to the lowest depths of Lexana, you know, in season like six, I was like, ooh, all right, we got to move on from this.
How could she do that to him?
It was pretty bad, man. It was a bad look. And then season seven, they finally got together, but I was like, it's too late now. Like, we've gone through too much. I don't care. And then when she showed back up in season eight, it kind of derailed the whole thing because, like, Lois and Clark had finally started to get together. So she shows up and then, you know, derails that whole relationship. And then, of course, the ending is very... I don't know, with the kryptonite suit. And
I thought it was pretty horrible, actually, because, like, the whole thing is, you know, Lex puts kryptonite inside of her body. Now she can't be around Clark, and they have the one final kiss, blah, blah, blah. Clark can put on a blue kryptonite ring, and he's fine. Let's just ignore that.
That's a good point there, Eric.
I thought that when I watched it. I was just like, what the hell? Put on a blue kryptonite ring, moron.
The Clark Kent from Smallville absolutely would have done that. He would have been like, all right, I'm done being Superman. You can be Superman, Lana, and I'll have this. Well, and then,
he wouldn't even have to do that. It would literally just be when he came home at night, slide on the blue ring. When he leaves back out, slide off the blue ring.
Oh, man, you're so right. You're so right. But ultimately, my biggest issue with how they wrapped up Lana is they made it, like, physically impossible for them to be together. So Clark was forced to get over her. As opposed to, like,
instead of her actually choosing Lois over her, it was, yeah. Well, I guess I have to take Lois because she's my only choice at this point. Can't have Lana.
Obviously, that's not what they were going for, but that's, I mean, it's hard to look at it any other way when, you know, this is season
eight. Oh, yeah, you really
eight.
Look at it that, you know, Lana was his, like, true one and only. And
right.
Like, almost like a Romeo and Juliet type story. Tragedy has kept them apart.
So, I mean, obviously, we'll get there in the podcast when I get there in season eight and, like, dissect all that to the nth degree, but yeah, I mean, this is the middle to late season eight, and we have Clark and Lana still together in love, and they're forced apart. And then, yeah, him and Lois fell in love and all that, and that's all well and good, but yeah, you can't tell me that if Clark could have been with Lana, then we have, like, Clark and Lois are about to have their first real kiss in season eight, right, at the wedding. And then Lana shows up and interrupts everything. It's like literally record scratch. And we got to put that on hold for another half season. So that's my issue with how they wrap that up. I think.
And literally, when she shows up, Lois is on the back burner. Forget Lois.
Yeah.
Lana's back. So Smallville itself is not the, any way you want to look at it, it is not the Lois and Clark story by any means. It's not. It is the Clark and Lana love tragedy for 8.5 seasons out of 10. That is his main love for 8.5 seasons.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't say anything other than that. And so that's why I think it was important to have this kind of follow-up where you have Lois and Lana together on an adventure and they kind of address some of this awkwardness, you know? And I really liked this story. I liked how Lana found a purpose, you know? She's going to use her powers for good, getting away from Smallville, you know, which of course she would to kind of... obviously, she has to be away from Clark, but also just kind of distance herself from her whole life. And, you know, they bring in some recurring characters like Metallo, which I thought was interesting, which they kind of...
He actually looks like Brian Austin Green.
You know, he did. Now, I want to say this. Kat Skaggs is the artist of this comic, and everybody looks a lot like themselves. I think they capture the likeness of all the characters very well. What about you?
Yeah, they should have just stuck with one artist who actually tries to... draw the material and not just, hey, I'm just going to draw Superman. Yeah, I saw Superman in a comic before. I know what Superman looks like. I'll draw him. Do you know who Tom Welling is? No idea. Doesn't matter. I'll draw Superman.
Yeah. No, you're so right. Now, I understand that, you know, there's schedules and availability, but it's like, I don't know. Like, I would make that a prerequisite, and I don't know if there's some kind of likeness issues, but clearly they can use some... In some comics, the characters look spot on, and most of the covers they look spot on. But so I don't.
Yeah, there can't be a likeness issue if the cover looks like Clark, but the inside doesn't.
Right. Yes.
That can't be the issue.
Exactly. So I don't know. But anyway, it was very especially after that last arc, it was really refreshing to read this special and be like, oh, good, I recognize these characters, right? And you know, Lois, all Lois's stuff is great. You know, I mean, as I always say, they capture her voice perfectly. I can hear the words coming out of Lois's mouth as Erica Durant. And I really do love the awkwardness of a lot of some situations with Lana and Lois. And Lana's like, oh, how is he? And she's like, oh, Lex? Well, he's blah, blah, blah. No, you know who I'm talking about. And going through her scrapbook, because Lana has kept the scrapbook of, you know, Clark's exploits as Superman, and Lois kind of turns her engagement ring around to kind of hide it from Lana. And at the end, you know, she's like, "How? Oh, when's the wedding?" Yeah, I saw your engagement ring before you turned it around. Like, oh, I don't know what to say. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. You know, she wouldn't know what to say. So I like that whole dynamic, and I like Mentallo coming back. You know, as you said, Brian Austin Green. Now, they kind of retcon like what happened to the character, but they'd already done that in the show because they mentioned, one, how Tess gave him the red kryptonite heart, right, at the end of season 9. I'm like, oh, okay, well, he's going to be Metallo. Like, he's off the board now. He's going to be a different Metallo now. But then in season 10, at the end of Prophecy, we have that, like, the would-be Legion of Doom that Toy Man puts together. There is a character there who, you know, obviously a body double, but supposed to be Metallo, and he has a green heart, and you're like, whoa, what happened there? And they mentioned that here, just, you know, I give it credit. They at least mentioned, like, oh, yeah, that didn't take, so I went back to my green kryptonite heart. So kudos to them for the continuity.
Kind of tied up a little bit in there,
Yeah, totally. So I appreciate that, and I think that's a perfect character for Lana to fight, you know, being kryptonite-infused. He's kryptonite-powered. He can absorb it, so then they, you know, solve, quote-unquote, the problem with Lana being infused with kryptonite. But, you know, she knows that life for her and Clark is passed on now. So she's not going to, like, go back and try and, like, obviously Lois and Clark are engaged, so she's not going to go back and be like, hey, Clark, what's up? You know? So I'm glad that that's, like, passed everybody.
But the big question is, if she did, what would Clark do?
I think, being an honorable person as Clark is, he would stay to his commitment to Lois, but it would be a struggle. Maybe that's why they don't get married for like 7 years. You know,
That's what happens when the show's off the air. He takes a little bit of time back and forth dating both of them, and then eventually 2019 comes around. He chooses Lois.
Yeah, I think we cracked it. I think we finally figured out what was going on. You know, from 2012 to 2016, it was on again, off again with these guys, but. But yeah, this is a good story, and being, you know, I really like these specials, man. Like, I really liked Effigy with Batman and Martian Manhunter, and I like this one, you know, Valkyrie here with Lana and Lois, and I think maybe these were, you know, I like the specials more than the overall arcs, even though Superman's not really in them. I think these are kind of stronger, tighter stories, being just one issue. They kind of have to get it all out there. There's really no filler, you know, there's no, like, crazy side plots. Like, I don't know, I think they're doing, I'm really glad they did these, you know, because they're a little something different than the main story arcs they have going on. So I really did enjoy Valkyrie.
We forgot they existed.
Yeah, that's why we're doing these combination episodes. It's like, oh yeah, all those, right? I remember that Lana shows up and Lois, but I didn't know that was like a one-off special. But
I was thinking it, like, I remembered it, but I was kind of thinking, you know, just kind of like the whole Earth 2 thing in the first issue. I thought it was just a background story to another issue. Speaking of which, the whole Crisis thing, we're not seeing much about that in most of these issues anymore. They've pretty much been leaving that on the back burner.
Yeah, that's going to come back in a big way coming up. You know, to kind of tie both things together. There's a lot in Olympus about, you know, the president. By the way, President Martinez, I guess I just kind of assumed the president was Obama, but I guess not. President Martinez, you know, he gets a couple of mentions in Olympus, and then the hook for the next story arc, Alien, is Superman, you know, visit the president. He tells him that he's an alien because he wants to, you know, inspire people to not fear the other and that kind of thing, because there was a lot of that going on in Olympus. And you don't think about that because, you know, we all know the Superman story so well, right? We're like, oh, well, yeah, Superman's an alien, but the world doesn't know that. And then because of the series finale of Smallville set up this fear of aliens because an alien world apocalypse almost, like, destroyed the Earth. People are kind of xenophobic about that kind of stuff. Very, very Batman v Superman to us, right? I mean, yeah. So that's going to set up our next arc. And, you know, they actually rebrand after this. I mean, we're still calling it Smallville Season 11, but Olympus was issues 16 through 19. But then they stopped branding him Season 11, and they call it Smallville. And then the little subtitles of Season 11 continues, and that's like Smallville Alien issues 1, 2, 3, 4. So I don't know why they did that. But
yeah, it makes it more confusing for sure.
Oh yeah, and that's part of our confusion in our yeah, adding up all the issues.
I was looking through it, and I was like, yeah.
But yeah, you know, this is a pretty good overall 1-2 punch. I enjoyed Olympus a lot more than Argo. Effigy was great. I think Effigy from last time, the number one special, probably is my favorite of any of these stories. But I did like Valkyrie as well. And, you know, and then at the end of, you know, at the end of Valkyrie, Lana's like, even though I don't have my powers, I feel more powerful than ever. I'm like, you know, that's a good message, you know, for that character. You know, that was, they never could figure out what to do with Lana in those later seasons, and I'm glad she has found peace as a character on her own journey. Now, I'm interested to see if she shows up again. I would guess not, because she doesn't have powers anymore.
Yeah, well, she went back to still protect those same people, so she probably gets all ballsy and gets killed in the next day or two.
Okay, it's a John Blake situation from The Dark Knight Rises. Like,
yes.
That guy got killed his first day on the job. But yeah, I don't know. You know, we'll see. I'm interested because I've not read the last arc here, as I've said, and I'm like, they probably bring Lana back for that because, you know, you think they would. Like as I said, I would have liked to see in the series finale of Smallville just like a. And, you know, maybe they could get some stock footage or something or from some other show. I don't know. But just Kristen Kirk watching a TV, like, and seeing Superman save the day, right? Just as some kind of cameo. Like, I don't know. Because it did feel like and the show had moved on from Lana by that point, absolutely. You know, and by the end of season 10. But, you know, Lana had been such a major character for 8.5 years, as we said. It's odd for her to just not be present or mentioned at all. I mean, yeah, she's in the stock footage of, you know, when Clark has his flashbacks to his life, you know, in the finale.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I think that would have been an appropriate thing just to see, like, a reaction shot of Lana Lang watching all this take place and just to know she's good and all that. So anyway, she was, you know, the number two character on the show for years. I'm glad they wrote this story, and I think it served the character well, and it wrapped up, you know, that dangling plot thread of, oh, Lana Lang's running around in a kryptonite-empowered suit for the rest of her life on Smallville, right?
Yeah, so it's nice to get that, like, at least somewhat wrapped up. But it's like you said, it is, for the whole story, he never actually chose Lois over Lana. It actually, the last time that he had a choice, he chose Lana over Lois.
Yeah, it's not a good look. It's not a good look, Smallville.
No.
But you know, this one kind of smooths that stuff over, I think. And I really am enjoying these comics. And yes, in my head canon, these are real. And I do think nothing will contradict them in Crisis, because they're just not going to spend that much time talking about this stuff. So.
Well, I don't know, because I don't remember where the whole Crisis in these comic books goes. So,
yeah, you're right. Sure. Yeah, and as you mentioned, the monitors and stuff like that comes back in a big way in the next arc. So I'm looking forward to talking about that next time. Smallville Alien season 11 continues, and then also the season 11 special Hollow is next. So
hey, let me mention one thing before we get off here: the new photo that CW just released of Lois and Clark from Crisis. Clark's wearing a wedding ring. Just throwing it out there. They're married.
They are married. They finally, and I like to think now that they actually really did get married after the series finale when he's like, tell the minister, I might be a little late, right? He runs off.
Yeah,
does what he's going to do.
So they've been married 2 years.
He did whatever he was going to do. And then he actually 2018. So they've only been married 1 year. Because it was 7 years of the feature of 2011. But he went off.
Well, that actually might air in 2020. I don't know.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. So he went off. He did what he was going to do. And he came back. And they got married at their ceremony. So that's the way I'm going to see it. Also, you know, some people have pointed out like that he's wearing Jonathan's watch, which I think is a great bit of continuity. I'm like, that is, well, you know, well done. Well done for the continuity there, I think, because that was always a big part of Clark. And I like that he's Farmer Clark. People are mad about the gloves. You know, you saw my social media. I posted about the gloves, and I'm like, look.
Well, the whole mad about the gloves thing is just stupid. I mean, he works with crap. You want crap on your hands, even if you're superpowered? Come on now.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I'm like, people were trying to say that, oh, he must have given up his powers or something. No. That's why I went and I found a season one photo, right, from the episode Crush, season one. And there's probably dozens of other ones, but I remember this one. This one's like in the companion, so that's why it's like fresh in my mind. They use this photo. Clark in the barn doing some chores with the gloves on. All right, so I'm like, he's been wearing these gloves his whole life. It's just so funny. Hashtag Glovegate. I don't know. It's just so funny that people like latch on to that one thing. Like, he must have lost his powers. And why is he using an axe? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe he needs to chop something more precisely than he can with his hand. Like, there's 100 explanations.
Yeah, if you remember when he was using his hand to chop, the wood was not coming out very easy.
He was just blowing up, right?
Yeah.
But no, that's so great to see that. Obviously, we've seen a couple of pictures of Clark on the farm now with Lois. So
apparently, though, if you have superpowers, you want manure on your hands. That's just what you want. You don't want to wear gloves.
It's just so funny to see what people latch onto. But yes, it's great to see official photos. These are the first official photos. Obviously, we had a couple of on-set, you know, selfies and stuff from the actors. But to see official photos released right up there with everything else, Brandon Routh as Kingdom Come Superman, Kevin Conroy as Kingdom Come Bruce Wayne. So excited for Crisis.
I really am so excited. And that basically tells you that Batman existed in the Superman Returns / like 1978 Superman universe. So that's pretty cool that they tied all that together.
I mean, I'm sure they're not going to go too deep in it, but you can like infer everything. Like if that's the same universe, like there's so many cool possibilities.
One of the producers in an interview said that it is the same universe and basically said that it'll be, I can't remember what he said, but basically it'll be the finish for the Superman Returns universe.
Excellent.
Is basically how he said it. So it is, he said it's officially canon.
And then ergo, that's finishing the Christopher Reeve universe as well. So it's great.
Exactly.
I'm so excited. Kevin Conroy is live action Bruce Wayne, right? It's something we wanted since we were kids, and we're going to see it, and I'm so excited.
But dude, Mark Hamill should be live action Joker.
I know, but they can only fit so many people in this thing, right? So, but yeah, and Mark Guggenheim has said there's still a few
even
more surprises.
Even 10-second cameo of him as the Joker just talking.
Well, you know, Mark Guggenheim has said there's a few more surprises that they're not revealing, which is great. I want people like, where's our picture of Tom Welling as Superman? I'm like, you really think if he does show up in a costume of some kind that they're going to release that now? Like, you got to.
Of course not.
Yeah, that's a moat. Like, and if it doesn't happen, I'm not going to go, like, you know, destroy my TV and throw it out the window out of frustration. But I really do. I kind of expect, like, him to have a big hero moment. You know, at the end where he showed,
I did expect that, but then I read it like where some guy who was at Comic-Con said he talked to him and he said he's only in one scene.
Don't believe it.
The pictures you see are only from one scene.
Don't believe it. Remember
when I do believe it. I'm just saying it's putting more doubt.
Remember for months they were like, oh, we don't know about Christ. Nobody asked us. And yet here they are. Right. So we'll see. So anyway, lots of fun talking about all this good stuff with you, Eric. If people want to find you out there online, where can they find you?
Facebook.com/SmallvilleEleventhSeason or Facebook.com/MMAOutsiders.
Alrighty, as for me, you can find me on Twitter personally at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. And as for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. Find us on Facebook at Always Sold into Smallville. And you can send us an email at AlwaysSmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. We'll be back next time with our next special talking about Smallville Alien and Hollow. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.